is crucial to support the principles on which Europe stands, that borders cannot be changed by force, that war criminals must not escape justice, and that the aggressor must pay fully for the war he started. And this is why decisions on Russian assets are essential.
So that was a comment by Volodymyr Zelensky, I think earlier today, in front of a bunch of European parliamentarians, as they're trying to come up with a unified position on how to respond to Trump's so-called 28-point peace plan. And you would think that the Ukrainian side, along with all their European buddies, were on the top militarily, and they were getting ready to just dog on the Russian side there, who apparently is a criminal state. What do you make of that, Andrei Mardyanov?
Well, I mean, yeah, Vladimir Putin pretty much clearly delineated, if you wish, you know, the borders and the framework within which Russia is going to work. Just now, I mean, about a couple of hours ago, Ushakov, Mr. Ushakov, the first aide to Mr. Putin, I mean, flatly said that we reject whatever the Europeans propose. Obviously, it was dead on arrival. And he said even the framework which was discussed with Mr. Trump is going to, we can take it as the framework, but the details will be worked out later. And as we all know, the devil is in the details. And obviously, there will be no freezing on the conflict. So militarily, Europe is done. They are impotent militarily. Without United States, there are literally nobodies militarily. So, and the military victory has been achieved in the sense that essentially there is now what is happening on the front line. It's a sporadic. It becomes to what is called Achagovaya. Achagovaya means they're enclosed into one locality, not complete, you know, continuous front. And as you saw yourself, what is happening all over the place, I mean, there are breakthroughs. And Russians are not in rush, really. They don't have to be. And as a result, we have what we have. These 28 points, out of those 28 points, very many will be rejected, already have been rejected by Russia. Russians' position is well known. Even such criminal organization as Wall Street Journal actually admitted yesterday that, Russian strategy, and I explained, I was making my video yesterday, and I explained that people don't understand. It wasn't the strategy. These were political aims which have been actually put forward, and they never changed. You know, so those root causes, so to speak, they remain the critical point, the foundation on which Russians going to be talking to anybody. If they do not address root causes, there you go. And Vladimir Putin is absolutely correct when he stated that, yeah, it's a criminal regime. It's a Nazi regime. It is supported by, Trump had his chance. All kinds of things like that. So it's not a territory coveted by Kremlin. It is the political annihilation, essentially, of the current regime, and it will be annihilated. And so what can I say? Europe chose its own path. Trump's still in the limbo. He tries to, pretend that he is not a party to this war, while in reality, United States is a co-belligerent. And but again, he had his first, 2 weeks to stop this conflict, to stop this war.
And let me ask you, on this 28-point peace plan, there was an interesting thing going around. I really like your view on this past weekend. I guess it actually started on Friday that there was, and I can't remember which reporter it was. It may have been NPR, may have been Wall Street Journal. I can't remember, but it got huge spread all over Western media, especially on X. That turns out that the truth is this wasn't Trump's plan at all. This was actually Russia's 28-point plan.
No, that's complete BS, obviously.
Yeah. So I wonder if you can explain why that's not the case.
Oh, it's absolutely not the case. Well, what NPR, Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox do for a living, they lie. And again, most of those organizations, they are not free press. They are owned either by Murdoch or are under control of whatever, CIA, FBI, whatever, or AIPAC, you know, so and things of this nature. So they all spread this what I call brown noise. This is a brown noise. It's a spinning of BS for American public, which already sick and tired for all, not only American public, global South, if you wish. And it's not working. And as a result, Russians flatly basically denied today again that, yeah, it's all BS. We have only one framework which we negotiated. So much of those 28 points could be negotiated, but there are some things which are, there is no freezing of the conflict on the line of the contact. And as I explain to people constantly, if you take some average retard, which is, you know, Western Journal, that's who they are for the most part, and you start to explain to them on the map, many people still don't understand that at this moment, as we speak, Gallipoli is an operational cauldron right now. There is an operation which is ongoing. It's slow. Russians will continue to do it slow on liberation of Kherson. The Kupiansk and Krasnoarmeysk already know what is happening. But what many people do not understand, Russians already 40 kilometers plus inside Kharkov territory, Kharkov Oblast territory. They are 20 plus kilometers inside Sumy Oblast. They are, especially in Zaporozhye, the front is moving to the west. And then, of course, we have Dnipropetrovsk penetration, which is really, really deep. There are another about 20 kilometers in Dnipropetrovsk area. The main point of all this has been stated by Vladimir Putin last year. There will be the security zone, buffer zone. Russians do not need those territories, but those territories will be under full control and demilitarized to the point that there will be nothing other than probably some AK-47s there. That's it.
And so let's look at some of those points, because when I was talking with Larry Johnson last week, he had a similar mocking, in fact, outright laughing as you did, the idea that Russia was going to agree to these 28 points. And we just picked five of them right off the top. One is that why would the Russians ever actually write out to say the Ukraine could have 600,000 troops at the end, that the U.S. would provide security guarantees, that frozen funds of Russian funds, $100 billion, I think it was, would be used to help rebuild Ukraine. Zaporizhzhia and Kherson would be frozen where they are, not go back to Russia. And then, of course, that Russia would have to retreat back to some given lines. I can't imagine Russia agreeing to a single one of those, can you?
Well, it's a brown noise. It's, you know, it's fantasy alternative universe, you know, the alternative reality. That's where they live in. And as many times have been stated, it is the front line which defines everything. The pivot of the geopolitics today, global politics today, is on all around those lines of contact between Russian army and whatever is left of the armed forces of Ukraine, which Russians don't call anymore armed forces. They call them the terrorist formations, which they are. And the other issue which they do not understand, even if to imagine, of course, this 600,000 thing is just laughable. That's what happens when you have the economics degree from the Ivy League, such as Besant and all those people who do not understand what actually real armed forces are. Ukraine, as it exists today, won't be able to support even 60,000 of anybody seriously armed. You cannot explain to the average Harvard graduate from the economics what they are talking about, because those morons know everything only from the Wall Street, all those fictional, you know, bubbles. In reality, Ukraine doesn't have industrial energy, whatever infrastructure to support even a single army corps. Everything what is happening right now in Ukraine is financed and armed and supported by the combined West, by NATO. And that's what people do not understand. The Russians don't fight Ukraine. Ukraine has been defeated already in September 2023, after famed counteroffensive, which was a complete catastrophe. Russia fights NATO. And those people who do not understand that, I mean, it's just as simple as that.
You know, I want to, Gary, if you could pull that headline back up, the one you just had there. It's interesting that you have the Russians are saying, okay, this is these 28 points. That's fine. It represents a beginning point. At least I think Dmitriev said, you know, it's at least you're talking about some of our points. So that's, and actually, you know, it was Putin himself who said, yeah, we can start from this position. We can start a conversation here. But then you see this one here, the Ukraine side is saying, nobody's going to support this. We're not going to support it at all. So you got the Russians and the Ukrainians, first of all, saying we're not going to do it. The Europeans are throwing in and saying, well, actually, you're not going to do anything about this without us involved. So they don't like any of it. And then this is Secretary of State Marco Rubio yesterday talking about how close we were.
The deadline is we want to get this done as soon as possible. Obviously, you know, we'd love it to be Thursday. We'd love to be. Ultimately, the important point today is that we have made substantial progress. We've really moved forward. So I feel very optimistic that we're going to get there in a very reasonable period of time very soon. You know, whether it's Thursday, whether it's Friday, whether it's Wednesday, whether it's Monday of the following week, we want it to be soon because people are going to, between today and the time we deal with this, more people are going to die.
Yes, I'm sorry. Even before you have this comment, I just, for all of our American viewers and some of our international viewers who may not know Secretary of State Rubio, before you take anything he says too seriously, remember this gem from back in April.
So we came here yesterday to sort of begin to talk about more specific outlines of what it might take to end a war, to try to figure out very soon, and I'm talking about a matter of days, not a matter of weeks, whether or not this is a war that can be ended. If it can, we're prepared to do whatever we can to facilitate that and make sure that it happens, that it ends in a durable and just way. If it's not possible, if we're so far apart that this is not going to happen, then I think the president is probably at a point where he's going to say, well, we're done.
So that was back in April. The sides didn't come dead together, but Trump didn't say we're done. And now here we are again, November, heading into the end of the year, heading into the fourth year of this war beginning. What do you say to those?
Well, I mean, it's the property of the feature of the American politics to speak a lot and say absolutely nothing. It's just basically shaking the air. And Marco Rubio is the exhibit A of that ability to basically say a lot of things in general and nothing in particular. So Trump, at some point of time, it's a schizophrenic position because obviously Trump now made this war his war. It's his, you know, own doing. And now he suddenly, as 2 weeks ago, he said, oh, let them fight out. And then suddenly he comes back, okay, let's, you know, do that thing. He is not gonna get anything, period. It is all maneuvering for the internal consumption. All this BBC, by the way, BBC, British BS Corporation, a pedophile central, you cannot take anything serious which is coming out of London because BBC, the same as the, whatever, the Sun, the Daily Mirror, they are all tabloids. They don't have anything but tabloids. And, well, if you look attentively, they're basically, British government is a tabloid in basically. And so we have to keep this in mind. It is brown noise for the domestic consumption in those respective countries and those respective Brussels, especially because they are panicking. And it has been told to them since 2023, you know, well, actually, I knew already, many of us knew that what 2022 came out to be, you know, but we said, okay, let them do the counteroffensive. They did. Okay. Everything what everybody needed to know was there. Everybody understood everything that they needed to understand. And so now, what can they do? That's the problem. I mean, people have to be asking the main critical point, which, of course, all Western media today, legacy media, try to, you know, cover up, try to obfuscate. What are you going to do? So what, France? With this pathetic brigade, I mean, this is the joke of the armed forces. If you remove the nuclear deterrent, who else? What are they going to do? They're going to start operation? Russians are not idiots. They have the whole directorate, economic directorate in their general staff. They have all those colonels and major generals with not just only PhDs in military sciences. They have PhDs in economics. And we are talking about economics as not it is taught in this, you know, what this degree means in Ivy League. Those guys know how to calculate. They know how to produce the strategic forecasting based on things which is what superb intelligence. Apart from the fact that you can do it actually by open source intelligence. So they know what they're dealing with. They know what are the economic realities, for example, of the same United States. And they know that Europe is done. They will not be able to produce whatever they say. It's all garbage. It's all hot air to make an impression on otherwise population of, for example, Western Europe, which is getting poorer. And some of them is being essentially, well, disintegrating, disappearing as nations. For example, like very many people, many analysts say, I stated it was 2050, but some people with the knowledge of France, they said that France will not exist as we know it by 2035. And this is what is happening. There is the disintegration which is happening, economic, cultural, ethnic, social, what have you, in Europe. So those regimes, those totalitarian regimes, Brussels is a totalitarian state. It's a, not state, I mean regime. Look at Macron. Look at those people in, you know, in UK. You can go to jail for this social media post. So there you go. United States, in order for it to survive economically, it needs to sacrifice. Well, sacrifice is the not wrong word. It's a wrong word. It needs to eat Europe, using it as their shrinking market for its production. Whatever the United States can return to produce. And so when you look at this situation, okay, do they want to fight the war? No, they know they cannot win it. No matter what they do, there are no, you know, this decision tree. There is no branches, you know, there is no junctions which lead to any kind of the this path where they can get something which they can say, oh, look at us, we want something. They lost it, period. Combined West lost it.
Right, but see, here's the big problem. Is that they don't acknowledge or recognize that they've lost it right now. I argue all the time that it's past tense, that the war is lost, the outcome is clearly known. The only thing we don't know is just how deep the cost will be for the West and for Ukraine specifically, because that's still playing out. And most people in the West, because they see the game still being played out, they're either unaware or oblivious to it, or they don't care about it. It's unclear which it is, but there's something definitely going on. And I want to look at those two aspects here. Let's start off, first of all, since you started with Europe, this is Ursula von der Leyen, and I don't remember if this was yesterday or today, but she's saying three things that the Ukraine side must have in order for to get the support of Europe to end the war.
We have agreed on the main elements necessary for a just and lasting peace and Ukraine's sovereignty. And let me highlight three of them. First, borders cannot be changed by force. Second, as a sovereign nation, there cannot be limitations on Ukraine's armed forces that would leave the country vulnerable to future attack and thereby also undermining European security. Third, the centrality of the European Union in securing peace for Ukraine must be fully reflected. Ukraine must have the freedom and sovereign right to choose its own destiny. They have chosen a European destiny. It starts with the country's reconstruction, its integration into our single market and our defense industrial base, and ultimately joining our union.
So this just—it's just hard for me to see how when we're talking this late in the war, with all the battlefield destruction that you've been talking about at the start of the show, that you still have these claims that no, we're not going to talk about any peace on any terms unless they're our terms, and here they are. What can you make of this?
Oh, nothing. Nobody cares in Russia or Kremlin what Europeans say, including European populations. Russia is done with the West. It's over. And so, or she can say whatever she wants. A reality is a very interesting thing. You can, well, you know what? I must have $1 million to finish paying off my mortgage, for example, tomorrow. And, you know, it's sure I can, you know, put forth any kind of demands. The problem is, what kind of tools do I have for that? Ursula von der Leyen, as most of the Western politicians, is an imbecile. Plus, she's corrupt. They wouldn't understand the first thing. They bet the house on that. And now, when it's all clear, you see, that's the problem. Even, I believe, Foreign Policy yesterday wrote in its article that, oh, you know what? The global South is taking the place of the United States in the global trade. Well, yeah, we know that. The problem is, as I already stated, nobody cares what average European think, what average media personality in Europe thinks, let alone all the bunch of the war criminals, essentially. Ursula von der Leyen, together with all her basically cabal of the European Commission, they are war criminals. And so for many people, they will be charged in absentia once the tribunal for the crimes against humanity and war crimes in Ukraine commences, in probably in Moscow and Donetsk, and there will be many people who will be charged in absentia, including very many people from the Western media.
Gary, can you bring that headline back up there again? Man, that is just stunning to me. First of all, in light of all of the battlefield losses where Pokrovsk is effectively gone, Kupiansk is nearly gone. As in fact, it may be gone according to the official Russian outlines. Yeah. Huliopolia, as you pointed out, is nearly gone. Zaporizhia is starting to go under more. Dnipropetrovsk region has having additional. In Kharkiv, there's additional movement there. And then EU leaders welcome new momentum European peace talks. And then that subheadline, Swedish PM says Russia, quote, must be forced to the negotiating table. I'm short of words in light of what's going on, because at some point you said a second ago, the war is already over, but it does still continue on. But at some point it will physically be over, because the Ukraine armed forces will simply be
evaporate to the last Ukrainian. They wanted the war to the last Ukrainian. Russia will oblige. And actually, the removal of the 200,000 of Ukrainians in the United States, as you know, the ICE is not prolonging their visas, temporary visas. They are being shipped back to Ukraine. It's not going to help. But again, you have to explain to all those guys with political science or law degrees what real war is, how armies are formed, how they're trained, how they're shaken down, what is the combat cohesion on the level of the tactical units, on the operational level, and things of this nature. You cannot explain it to them. They are morons. They are all graduated from Oxfords, from all Göttingens, from Sorbonnes. They have degrees in nothing. They have no real experience with real economies, with real military, with anything real. They are good only at demagoguery. And that demagoguery is used for only one thing, to keep them in power, period. It's obviously the matter of corruption. It's the matter of this cottage industry, like Kellogg. Kellogg's family, General Kellogg's family, cottage industry. They're making, side profits for, supplying the whatever the hell they're supplying to Ukraine from the United States. Of course, he will support and will spew any kind of BS, which he can possibly, he supports actually Nazis. So, it's going to go like this. Europeans are totally emasculated, totally docile. They have only bread and circuses. So, and these people will continue to BS them, because Europe lost the honor, dignity, and humanity in it. So that's why it's Europa de Lenda Est, So in the way it exists, European Union, European Commission, they will be annihilated by the virtue of the logic of circumstances which are being generated now on the battlefield, because they suddenly recognized that they don't have armed forces. They are a joke. European part of NATO is a joke, literally, militarily, operationally. Their officer corps is a joke. They don't have real military education. So what can I say? You look at this, all those generals, we're going to send something and, some brigade. Well, sure. Russians annihilate daily about the worth of single brigade daily. So what can I say? Let them live in this alternative universe. Nobody cares.
I guess there is, though, a reaction from Russia. Gary's showing one of them right there on the headline. Yeah. But let's take a look at some others. First of all, just for some context for this next one, I'm going to have Maria Zakharova, who made a comment. But to set things up, there was about a week or so ago, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz went on. Gary, if you could put that full screen up there. He was basically saying that the world order that we've known is no longer the same. He said, we know with considerable certainty that the order that the West have experienced over the last 80 years has now come to an end. Underlying, the EU must reform and strengthen unity among members to become a major player in this new world order. If we want to shape this new world order, then that can only be done in Europe, only together with our European neighbors, he says. Well, Maria Zakharova was asking, I think it was just yesterday, she was asked, what does Russia think about that only is going to be Europe?
First of all, because we need to understand what exactly he meant by the familiar order has come to an end. Familiar? What is implied by that? If it is the international legal order based on international law, on a UN-centric model, on the UN Charter and the fundamental principles laid out in that document, then it must be said that this is not simply ending on its own, or that someone considers it to have ended or might end, but that they did everything to make all of this fall apart.
I mean, is she just being, oh, that's just what the Russians say, or does she have a valid, legitimate point that this whole system that's come to an end is because the Europeans made it come to an end?
The West, combined West, yeah. For example, United Nations is an utterly corrupt organization, and its headquarters, primarily, there is a Swiss part of it, but its headquarters, obviously, we know where it is, United Nations building in New York. It is under the influence of the combined West, with, for some reason, France being the part of the victors of the World War II, which is a whole other story, because Stalin and de Gaulle had a very good relations, and Soviet Union wanted France to be part of it. But the point is that it's over, yeah. Zakharov makes the point, her salient point, is that it was combined West which killed it. I agree with her. I wrote a number of books on that. It was deliberately done this way because, obviously, the system ran its course, the economic system, which, of course, turned into the financial capitalism, which produces virtually nothing. It primarily makes those bubbles in Wall Street economy. And for them to survive somehow, look at Russia, a gigantic territory with the more than one-third of all resources in the world. It is a fat, fat, desirable target. And in order for them to get there, they needed repetition of 1990s. They needed to remove, as they called, Putin's regime. They needed to break Russia apart, which that is why you have all kinds of those fringe elements. For some reason, they call them Russian opposition. They are just basically nut jobs. But yeah, they love them in Washington and in Brussels. But that was the whole idea. That was the strategy. That's why Vladimir Putin's speech in 2007 in Munich on the Global Security Conference, well, late McCain was laughing. Boy, he doesn't laugh anymore, you know, wherever he is in hell, you know, burning there somewhere. I hope so. But the point is that, yeah, this order, which at least maintains some, appearance of the international law and some, you know, basically discussion place, if you wish. It's gone. It's over. And UN is a corrupt organization. I'm not sure even if it can be reformed. I think that in the end, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and political and economic structures of BRICS eventually will supplant it, and they will be called again. They will reintroduce number of the articles which are in the United Nations Charter. And then that will be that's the new world order we are living now. It's multipolar, and it's not even bipolar. Well, kind of applies to a degree in a psychiatric sense. But it is actually, there are already several poles of power. And United States runs, it should run. If Trump has any sense left in him, he should extricate United States immediately if he wants to preserve United States in any way, even if for the vulture reasons or the great power, you know, one of few others. So, but Europe is done. Europeans can say whatever they want, however they want, but there is one constant in the international politics starting from the already from the World War I and especially after. It's energy and resources. Europe has none, and they have to face this reality. And as such, if you basically disassemble EU, each country, or even couple of them, for example, if you take a look attentively, granted, it's fake, it's fake index invented in the Wall Street and in New York, but even GDP per purchasing power parity, Russia is much larger than either France or Germany, or even larger than France and Germany combined. You cannot explain it to people from Harvard, for example. They do not operate with the normal data. They do not operate with normal tangibles. And so when you look at that, it's really, yeah, the only way for them to survive is to what? Gather together this old Europe, you know, and we know what old Europe is. UK, Germany, France, and Italy. Of course, they want to have others, you know, and they want to turn it into some kind of the European bloc. I have news for Europeans. You lost the arms race by a knockout. You're not even, you are behind the weapon generations by two generations, not one, but by two. And so they don't have resources. They don't have industrial wherewithal. And the only thing they can do now is to grab or hold on, you know what, at some things which they still have, like Airbus, you know. They can do Airbus. They still have this residual, you know, what, expertise and wherewithal to do that. But other than that, even Ben Hodges, of which I hope to speak on the first, you know, so today didn't work out. So he admitted, because his background was actually when he was growing up as an officer in the logistics. Even he admitted, surprise, surprise, that he said, logistically, NATO cannot perform. Wow, the whole, you know, common sense, you know, from Mr. Hodges, you know, that, yeah, correct. Russians are not idiots. Again, as I already stated, there is a whole department, you know, directorate in the general staff, which know what is the logistics of NATO in Europe. It's not done for the war. While NATO was more or less defensive alliance in 1960s, 1970s and all that, when British had the Army of the Rhine, you know, they had the Bundeswehr and all this. Everybody was supposed to fight in their own places, with the exception, obviously, of the occupation forces, which are United Kingdom and United States. But it was defensive, and at least it wasn't required that long lines of communications. Everything was prepositioned, and yeah, there was the total different technological paradigm at that time. Today, how they want to fight? How they going to deliver force? And I can sit here and I approximately can say that what will be required for NATO to survive first 2 weeks if they want to fight Russia, let's say, in Ukraine. That will be interesting without going nuclear because they will be annihilated. But they don't have it. They just don't. They.
And, you know, I mean, we can sit here and dog the Europeans. We can dog the Ukrainians, which we'll do here in a second because they're opening their mouth to deserve it. But you have to also add the United States into that because whatever Rubio said, Trump is saying, they seem to be totally disconnected from reality. And that headline that Gary again just put up there, which is, has a date of 6 hours ago, apparently the U.S. has changed their mind on some things and have gone more in the direction of Zelensky, which might help explain why he made this cocky statement earlier today.
Occupied territories remain occupied. And that means Russia remains a criminal state. Today, almost 70 parliamentary delegations are present. And if parliaments in Europe, in the world, do not close their eyes to this, then no one will.
So there you have it. Russia's a criminal state, and now he thinks he's got power in numbers. There's 17 parliaments of different countries around. How does that work out in terms of combat power, though? I wonder if you could help us out with that.
Oh, good Lord. Can you imagine me explaining to Tom Cotton what real combined arms warfare is? So it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. Again, United States have been thoroughly demilitarized. Unless United States wants to start delivering the remnants from the first line combat units, which are obviously what, 4th Armored Division, you know, the elements of other armor force in the United States, and they want to give up the rest of it, sure, it doesn't matter. It will go in and it will be annihilated. Even Rubio stated it. And let me quote him from a week ago. Marco Rubio, no less. He says, doesn't matter what we put, give to Ukraine. The moment they install it, within a week, it's annihilated. That's Rubio. I cannot believe he came up with the proper assessment of the strategic situation. So, and in this case, yes, you're absolutely correct that United States is the main driving force behind it. But now the situation diverged a little bit. And this is the critical point. Well, obviously, Trump has no principles except for being, you know, parading himself as the greatest thing ever in the universe. But even he understood essentially that you need to extricate the United States from that, as I already stated, because if you want to stay great power, you have to do this now to recoup, to try to do something domestically which can help. And but Europe is the sacrificial lamb. Europe will be eaten. Apart from the Chinese also have plans for Europe, by the way. And so when you look at this, yeah, the United States can do whatever it wants. Conventionally, it cannot fight the war. And it has been thoroughly demilitarized. And it also have been thoroughly paraded, manifested in terms of the technological paradigm and operational planning and art that it's not on the par anymore, if it ever was. And so no matter what they do, it is internal West's affair. However, United States will shuttle with, you know, with Europeans doesn't really matter for Russians, because, as I already stated, even Wall Street Journal admits that, yeah, it's the December 2021 statement by the Russian Foreign Ministry. That's the famous, you know, letter, you know, peremptory as they were, which was designed not to be fulfilled. Oh, well, maybe, but primarily, it was to state the clear position on what was coming in February. That's it. Here are the root causes. Address them, and there will be no war. Nobody addressed them. So, as you know, that, oh, good Lord, not this moron. Good Lord. So, yeah, and so in the end, what can I say? It's a situation which is dead end for combined West. It's over.
And, you know, and one of the things, and again, Gary's just on fire today. One of the things that really irks me, this is just one of many from the West. And this is John Bolton here. The question for the West is, are we going to force an invaded country to accept an unacceptable peace? That implies that there is a belief, and you see it's across the United States and Europe and certainly in the Ukraine, that there is a belief that there's a choice that can be made as if we don't want to force this peace on the Ukraine. So instead, what we'll do is what? I mean, militarily, what can anyone do? There is no right. Andre, I'm telling you, this is one of the really alarming things for all of our audience here. There is apparently an actual belief in the West, not just rhetoric, but actual belief, that we can just choose to win this war if only we want to, and that Russia somehow will submit to this or be compelled into a terms of our with. But tell me if I'm missing something here. I don't even see the theoretical possibility that there's anything we have that we could apply that would change the calculus in Moscow.
Well, you see, that's the problem, because you are a military professional with a combat experience, with a proper, you know, experience serving into, at that time, one of the best armies in the world. And the United States did have, at that time, one of the best armies in the world, if not for a short period of time, the best, especially when Russia was basically drowning in the 1990s. It was the first army in the world. So, but the point is that you cannot explain to them. That's the whole point. Yeah, they have belief. The problem is I can have belief that I'm Superman. Let me get on the, you know, roof of my house and fly. Listen, I need obviously the proper trunks and, you know, a blue attire and things like that and cape. So, but other than that, it doesn't matter what they say. You're absolutely right. They're shaking the air, because John Bolton, even the bunch of the people in, especially those two star and up over, you know, generals and Pentagon, they have no clue. And yes, you're stating correct problem and question. What can they do? What? They're going to send what? 4th Armored Division or 2nd Division into? So how long is going to exist there, you know, under present condition and with the United States military having no viable air defense, no viable air force which can actually operate within the modern environment? And so, okay, what else? Do they want to start the Third World War? That's why I voted for Trump. Because I knew if we vote for this, you know, cackling idiot Kamala and the criminal gang by Biden, you know, the corpse of Biden, rather, you know, so there was a good chance that it would come down to nuclear exchange. Because those lawyers, those morons like Sullivan or Blinken, people with zero understanding of military realities and industrial realities, they were so desperate already then that they could have driven the world actually to the brink of the nuclear exchange. That is why we went for Trump. Now we know who Trump is now, you know, don't we? So, but at least there is some group in his administration, which haven't been the case with Biden administration, which understands their ramifications. And those people want to leave because they understand that once it flies, their relatives, their sons, daughters, wives, mothers, fathers will be gone. And then after that is all over, there is another thing which I do not even want to go there into the nuclear issue here. But that's it. And so Mr. Bolton, who wouldn't understand the first thing about anything modern warfare related, he has no toolkit. They have to continue to, you know, shake the air, to purge this hot air, talking about that, oh, yeah, we have the choice. No, you don't. And that's it.
Before I let you go here, I want to ask one last thing from a perspective. You've written a lot of books on the military. You understand both tactics, operations, and strategic ramifications. And you already talked about the disparity within the East and the West here. There was something we talked about a little bit earlier today. I want to play you a short video from Alex from History Legends, who was analyzing an article that he found in again, the BBC, and in this case, BBC was accurately reporting, as you'll see in a second, about a military exercise, a training exercise in, I think it was conducted in it was either in Poland or in the Czech Republic, but it included both Poland, Czech leaders.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They were training some new recruits from the Ukrainian side. This is in October. And I'm going to let him talk for himself, but I'm just going to, even without any more setup, I want you to analyze what he found about the training from the West. Watch this.
They were surprised by scenarios where an APC crosses a river. They told instructors directly that any equipment will be destroyed by drones before it even approaches the shore. Then came the Czechs. During one of those exercises, Czech paratroopers had to storm Ukrainian positions. So you have Czech troops playing Team Red. They were commanded by an instructor called Yakub, a veteran from Afghanistan, while the Ukrainian Team Blue was preparing for the defense. The exercise starts. Czech troops leave the assembly area. I believe they formed attack columns and then advanced towards Ukrainian positions. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians simply launched their Mavic drones. Then the article says that after the first attempt, instructor Yakub stopped the scenario and asked, "Can we take out the Mavics?" Ukrainian Commander 18 asks why. The Czech Commander Yakub replied, "You find us too fast with your Mavics, and we can't get to you. You detect us on the approach to your positions." Wow.
That's Western NATO troops thinking that they're helping the Ukrainians prepare for modern war. What does that tell you about the actual training for NATO troops?
Well, General Von Reiper, Millennium Falcon 2002. And we all know what happened there. He just freaking destroyed the Blue Force. Next morning, they come back to this war games. They reset everything back and say, "Oh, we have additional life," like in the game. It's like he turned around and said, "Screw you, people," because that's what was happening always. Well, I don't know why this guy, where he was sleeping under what stone for the last 20 years, 25 actually. But even my friend Stas Krapivnik, a major, he served at the staff of the 18th Air Corps in the U.S. Army. He lives in Russia now. He said, "Yeah, we did the thing. You know, there are 82nd, 101st, and I don't remember what other division was in this corps, against the Russian tank army." He said, "Oh my God, are you kidding me? Light cavalry is actually fighting tank army." And he said, in 2010. And he said, next morning we come in and it's like, what happened? They have now again to the 100% strengths. They all replenished, no losses. Everything is in there. It's like, what the hell, man? And so that was already then. Now, if you go to my last video yesterday, I put there Business Insider from 2023. It's Business Insider. In order for me not to be accused of being pro-Russian or Russian rah-rah or biased, the officers of Ukrainian army, after what they encountered, in this famous counter-offensive 2023. And I quote, you can find this, it's all over the place. We have to discard all this NATO training, because if we would fight as Americans taught us, we would be dead by now. They come back to the good old combat manuals. And now, anybody who thinks that you can build your battalion into the company columns, and then you have the company columns into the platoon columns and approach this in the security zone, I have a bridge to sell them. They don't understand what modern net-centric warfare is, what a recon fire and recon strike complexes are, and that the field is monitored 24/7, every minute. You probably saw this thing about the wounded Russian guy. He had the Azart, you know, the radio station. He has this thing, and the drone tells him, and he has this leg, well, pretty seriously wounded. So he crawls back into the building. And the guys drawn up and say, okay, you have two Yukis coming in. You can find it. This video is there. So those Yukis run into this thing, you know, into this building and take the position there while the Russian guy sits behind them. And then once he saw it, two shots, gone. And, you know, after that, he is extricated and taken care of medically, and he's fine. So this is how the war fight is fought today, you know. And obviously, you can duel those columns, but do you want to, you know, if you need to conduct the operations within the operational and strategic framework which exists today in the front line? No, you want to physically kill the rest of the Ukrainian force. And I constantly repeat Alexander Svechin's from his magnum opus strategy that taking the territory is a necessary evil. You have to do it. But you do it only to kill your enemy. And then, of course, depending on what is the political outcome, you judge it as being liberated and part of your acquisition, which is happening right now, essentially. And Russians essentially pushing out the rest of whatever's left of this army to the borders and beyond the borders of the four new territorial oblasts of Russia, which is, of course, Kherson, Zaporozhye, Donetsk, and Lugansk. Lugansk is fully liberated. Donetsk is about to. So, and that's the war. That's modern war. It's 24/7 ISR all over the place. You communicate on the level of platoon. You can report immediately to the army corps if you have to, you know, so.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that troubled me so much about that report from Alex on this article, because that implies that the lessons that were painfully learned in 2023, the things that didn't work on the field, especially in combined arms operations in the Bradley graveyard, as everyone came to know later, none of those lessons have been learned because we're still trying to teach them. That is shocking to me.
Well, but I mean, what else can they do? How many? Well,
they can change, man. They can recognize the reality.
Well, evidently they don't. Yeah, I know, but listen, that's the problem. My favorite article from the Military Review from 2023, I believe, by Mr. Herrera. Wonderful review, outstanding actually, about Auftrag's tactic, you know, which United States wanted to copy. To own detriment, I can send it to you. It's wonderful. And it explains how they just absolutely stuck in this rut. They don't understand what is happening. And there are so many things which are, for example, they were copying Germans, and he was asking the very poignant question. If Germans, if Wehrmacht was that good, why did they lose? You know, this is just obvious thing to ask, you know, but no. And this is United States now is paying the price, essentially, through the also officer corps, through all those war colleges and general staff and command colleges, and you know that it was written for NATO by Wehrmacht generals. They shaped the views on the combined arms warfare of NATO. I mean, again, I will repeat the fact which is well known. Mr. Manstein and Mr. Hauser, among many other Wehrmacht generals, were officially employed by the U.S. Department of, of war, if you wish. You know, so they wrote those histories, they wrote those things, they wrote those operational manuals. And when you look and answer it today at the Army doctrinal publication, ADP FM 3-0, you look at this, it's like, oh yeah, that is all nice if you play the computer game. The problem is, where do you see those long-range fires? How do you deploy them? Ah, what to do with those assembly areas when, for example, Russians see 24/7, and this is the targeting. How do you deploy your brigade? How you spread it in order for it not to be annihilated? And so it's just, you look at this like, good Lord, you have to throw it away because it's written for who knows what kind of war. And yeah. The question was not that to improve the U.S. Army. I mean, U.S. Army had the, nobody denies the glory and heroism of American soldier during World War II, you know, especially, you know, so nobody says it, but they didn't study Soviet Army. They didn't study Red Army properly. The only guy I know, apart from obviously geniuses, best, not only American, one of the best global military historians are, of course, Colonel David Glantz and Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan House, who wrote this fundamental work. Even that work suffers a little bit, but at least it's like proper professional view of things. But when you look attentively at how it is being taught, especially British, good Lord, when you read this guy, Anthony Beaver, he's not military, he graduated, good Lord. I mean, the guy is the falsifier, he writes all kinds of political crap, and even Glantz and House, they stated in 2005, they stated that basically everything was shaped by the Germans. And they presented Russians like this, you know, waves of the, which is complete garbage, you know, it's just a good word. And so there you go. And we have the situation, and it continues. And until there is there cultural DNA, can cultural DNA be changed? It can, but nobody wants that. I certainly don't want that if the United States sustains catastrophic defeat on proper United States proper geographically. God forbids. Nobody wants that. Right. But that's the only thing which is going to change it. But they will continue, especially the way the whole thing is set up. They will continue to live within this paradigm. And some people, very many people, actually, American officers like yourself and senior officers who went through and they saw things, and they say, oh, no, that's not right. They're not going to be allowed anywhere the levers of the power and influence. It's simple as that.
I've seen that play out for sure.
Oh, personally, we know your story. We know your story really well, man.
Yeah, almost accidentally got in there, but then they found out, apparently.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see how this is going to play out. I mean, we know generally how it's going to play out. We just don't know the specifics, and it's just so, so agonizing that it's going to mean a lot more people have to unnecessarily die, and that's just what
that's what
makes it so anguishing to me to watch. You know, all these great European leaders, so-called, and oblivious to the human cost on the ground at their actions. But
they're psychopath.
And that will eventually be excoriated and exposed, but it'll come at a high cost, and we regret that. But we here, and thankfully you as well, are nothing but providing ammunition and evidence and truth, because we are unintimidated and uncompromised, and that's one of the reasons we love having you on the show, and because you have good videos on Smoothie X12, and we recognize and ask people to go there and get more, so you don't have to wait, because you got some good videos that are already out there that are recent. So recommend people go and see that. But in any case, thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys. Bye-bye.
And we thank you very much, too. Be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't done that. That helps us out more than you may know. And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.